You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, and I have a very difficult task to tackle at this moment. The task? To describe for you an amazing book. It is a feast for the eye. It is a pop-up book, a three-dimensional interactive marvel, and it was designed by an artist and paper engineer. His name is Robert Sabuda, and he is my guest in this portion of the program. The book I hold in my hands is Winter in White. The cover and the pages within shimmer. The colors and papers used remind one of the crispness and brightness of a snowy winter day. Jack Frost and snowflakes, snowmen and figure skaters, children on sleds and animals dressed in winter white. Now let me open this book for you. I don't know if you can hear it. It is a beautiful snowflake, sparkly silver and crisp white. And here next, let's turn the page. Here is a snowman popping up to greet us, the big round base of him appearing first. Next, the top of his top hat begins to emerge. And then, with the emergence of his midsection and head, we see his face. And his arms stretch out to greet us. Those are the first two pages of Winter in White by Robert Sabuda. He has designed many pop-up books, including Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and The Chronicles of Narnia. In addition to those titles and others, he also teams up with another artist, Matthew Reinhardt, to create pop-up books. Those books include The Jungle Book and The Pop-Up Book of Phobias. Books that appeal to kids and adults alike. Robert Sabuda, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, how did all this begin?
Well, when I was a young boy, I always knew that I was going to be an artist, and I loved working with my hands. My father was a bricklayer, my grandfather was a carpenter, and I found that the material I enjoyed most working with was paper. I loved to cut it, I loved to fold it, and I loved to make it into things.
Now, as a child, were you fascinated by pop-up books?
I was. I grew up in rural Michigan, and pop-up books for me at that time were, well, they were expensive books because they were hard-covered. But I was just fascinated with the idea that you could turn the page and not only be surprised if it was a picture book and there would be a picture, but you could turn the page and something would actually leap out or stand up from the page. I had never experienced anything like that before. I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I never forgot and have always held it very close.
Yeah, well, in Winter in White, there is a figure that stands up. Besides the snowman, everything stands up, but there's a skater that that pirouettes.
Well,
what a marvel.
Well, I always lived on a lake growing up in Michigan, and every winter we would have to, I didn't include this in the book, but every winter we'd have to shovel a rink out there on the lake so we could go skating, because my mother was a big fan of skating, so she taught us all how to ice skate. So I knew that in a book, you know, like this, Winter in White, being so white, I had to include a skater spinning somehow.
Wow. What is a typical day like in your studio?
Chaos. I hope that's okay to say that.
No, yeah.
Actually,
we prize honesty.
No, actually, it's really fantastic. I mean, a typical day for me here can be from sketching out, you know, ideas I might have for the jacket of a book, like Winter in White, or working in three dimensions. I may pick up a piece of cardstock and decide, you know, I want to make this snowman pop up, for example. And I will literally just begin cutting and folding that paper. I don't draw two-dimensionally what the pop-up will look like. I just begin right from the start sculpting the paper, taping it together, see if it works, see if it doesn't work. The most important thing in a pop-up is not to really get it to pop up, but it has to pop shut over.
Oh, yeah.
Again. So, you know, I'm working on color. I do some work on the computer, but the bulk of what I really do is very traditional, and that is working with my hands.
Yeah. Now, how does the process of creating one of these books begin? Do you begin with the story that you want to tell?
I do. It's always the story. The words come first. The story comes first. Or if it's a nonfiction book, because I do nonfiction work as well, all the research has to be completed. And after that work is done, I guess sort of a visual outline is created of what I would like the pop-ups to be. You know, say, for example, oh, I have to include a skater. Well, where will the skater fall within all the pages of the book? Once I've determined that, I begin to actually design the pop-ups. I make all the 3D constructions very roughly. And sometimes I'll have to make more than one version because, of course, it doesn't work right away. I can make 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 versions. Color is then created. Sometimes I'll create original artwork here with cut paper collage or on the computer. And then, believe it or not, all those books are made by hand.
Wow.
So I send all that material to the manufacturing plant. They print it. They cut it on a machine. But then every single piece is folded and glued by hand into that book.
Is there a part of this that you enjoy the most?
Yes. The part that I enjoy the most is when the pop-up works.
Yeah.
There is no greater moment here in my studio than after laboring over something for days or weeks. You open it up, and it's really, you know, it sounds sort of a cliche, but it's that ta-da moment. But it really works. It's like, ta-da. And everyone's like, oh, that's so great. It actually works. It's such a, because it's not only a surprise to the reader, to the viewer, but it's even a surprise to me when it does actually work. So that is by far the best
moment. Yeah. I would also imagine that working with the colors of the papers, the different papers, the texture of the papers, that would be a lot of fun as well.
Oh, it is, because you never know what kind of message that color or the fiber in the paper is going to portray when you turn the page. Do you want it to be like a flat, soft, snowy, quiet white? Or do you want it to be a shiny, silver, you know, brassy kind of trumpet sort of paper? It's wonderful to be able to not feel like, you know, I'm confined to just working with printed paper like in a printed book. I can actually come up with different papers for different textures, for different ideas. It's very old school in a certain way.
Yeah. Now, I imagine a good number of teachers use these books to inspire their students, both in reading and in art.
They do, yes.
What have you heard from teachers?
The first thing I heard from teachers was, if you don't live in my town, where is your website? So, which is true, because teachers use that as resources. So my website, robertsabuda.com, one of the first things I did at that website was create a program and lessons for teachers to be able to print out pop-ups, to learn how to explore them with their students, you know, just directly downloadable from my website. And so kids send pop-ups here all the time, and teachers are like, oh, I wouldn't have known how to start this kind of a program until I saw the patterns that you had at your site. So I think it's a wonderful way to start kids working and thinking sort of three-dimensionally in art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the times, especially now working with the computers, lots of things are two-dimensional. But to really to get a child to sort of also problem solve in three dimensions and do it with paper is something that is in some ways very old-fashioned, but it couldn't be more important in an educational system today.
Yeah. Well, your website is wonderful. It's beautiful, but it is two-dimensional. But it's so now here's how it's similar to a pop-up is. It's very interactive. Has your work as a bookmaker influenced the design and layout of your website?
Yes, it has. That's a very good point. Yes, it really has. I feel like the simplicity of the work that I do, or the way it appears, a lot of the pop-ups that I make are very complex, but the goal is to make them appear sort of simple. The same thing really needs to happen within the website. It should appear simple, but should provide all of this amazing, wonderful stuff sort of behind the scenes. So that has been one of my goals as the website has grown and grown and grown and really become quite large and quite popular today, which couldn't make me more happy, because if you live in, I don't know, South Korea, and you're the only person you know who collects pop-ups, you come to my website, you can find that there's many, you know, thousands of people who do as well.
Yeah. It is interesting to see the pop-up art from other places.
Yes. Somebody said to me, I live in my country. Oh, where was that? India, I think. And I don't know anyone who collects pop-ups. Could you put the pictures of my work on your website? And I thought, that is a great idea. So we created this international pop-up gallery for everybody around the world who created pop-ups to send us pictures and put them up on the site to share. And that, it's wonderful. Some things truly are an international language, and that doesn't matter what you speak. The world of pop-ups, you know, speaks its own vision, its own sound, its own magic.
Yeah. What kind of things have children sent you? What kind of pop-ups have they sent you?
They love to send pop-ups of things that have mouths, that you, and if they're boys, this is terrible, that usually have teeth on them as well, and something on the inside being eaten, because that's usually the simplest pop-up that you can make is a mouth. If you've got some really young artists there, you can just make a couple folds, a single cut, and you've got a mouth. But oftentimes one student, I guess they would remind me of me, really will go out on a limb. And they'll add extra things to it, and you can tell they'll spend a lot of time coloring it. And those are really those magical students, for me at least, that I know will certainly become artists as they grow.
Yeah. And also, you can add so many things besides the pop-up. I'm thinking of the Alice in Wonderland book now, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. There are, besides the pop-ups, there is the copy is interactive in a way.
Oh, yes, yes. I think one of the greatest things about pop-ups now is, you know, for a long time, pop-up books were really sort of the stepchild of children's publishing in general, and one of my goals was to hopefully sort of change that perception and being able to take classic tales and retell them like The Wizard of Oz or Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. You know, that's a way to really introduce some complex literature for children, because those are complex books. In a fashion that they can appreciate and enjoy at an earlier age, and then hopefully we'll go back and enjoy the novel at a later age. And so that has been very, very well supported by librarians, by teachers, by parents. So for me, it's just a whole other level that pop-up books, you know, can convey to an audience.
Yeah. The pop-up book now goes back more than 100 years. When and where did they begin popping up, and how have they changed a lot over the years?
Well, you're definitely asking the right person for that, because I do know a bit about the history. And actually, books that have moving parts in them, paper mm-hmm. parts that moved, mm-hmm. Those began about 700 years ago, actually.
Wow.
Only with the late 1700s, when children's books sort of enjoyed a golden explosion age in the late 1700s, were there also books with paper moving parts for young people. But actual pop-up books, things that actually popped up, those are from the mid-1800s, and they're all from Britain, and they were all classic tales as well. And how have pop-ups changed today?
Mm-hmm.
They have certainly become, well, I guess both good ways for me, they've become more accessible to young people across the board. Movable and pop-up books for children 100 years ago, 150 years ago, were definitely for the upper class. But today, I think that, you know, many, many more children across section of life can enjoy pop-up books and can afford them. And they have become more, I'm sure this is partly my fault too, they've become more complex. They certainly, you don't see a lot of things spinning around in pop-up books from 150 years ago. So that
yeah.
certainly has changed, and that is certainly my fault. But I love it, because, you know, people say, oh, it must be so wonderful, you know, you love kids, and I do love kids and everything, but I really make pop-up books for the boy in me, you know.
Yeah.
I make them spin around or do these cool groovy things because I would like that. The kid that I was would have liked that, so I make that now.
Yeah. Well, there were lots of oohs and ahs in the living room as we went over and over Winter in White and Alice's Adventures. But I've got to ask you before we wrap up, and we're drawn down on time, the pop-up book of phobias. This has got to be a book for adults, right?
Yeah.
So here, this is also your fault, yours and Matthew Reinhardt's.
Yes, it is. You know, one of the great things about books in general today, I think, is that so many different kinds of books can be accepted by the public. And sometimes we like to have our fears, you know, shown to us at point blank. And the pop-up book Phobias was so widely embraced in that sense, we had no idea it would become such a hit or such a classic book. It's more for adults, yes it is,
mm-hmm.
but it gets truly to the nature of the fears that we have that usually begin as children.
Yeah. Can you give us one phobia that's in there that will pop out at us?
One phobia, fear of clowns. I was very afraid of clowns when I was a child, and still probably am and avoid them, and there was a wonderful fear of clowns in there.
Ooh, I can't wait to find that and open that up.
Got to see it.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Robert Sabuda has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. You'll find him online at robertsabuda.com. And Sabuda is spelled S-A-B-U-D-A. robertsabuda.com.